Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
It would be appropriate if his 100th putt this week dropped a birdie.
What a finish for McIlroy!
And Gentile goes down, and this is one very tough lady from Italy. Been 10 rounds a couple of times, can't cope with Katie Taylor.
Sunshine 106.8.
A very good morning to you. I'm Ken Doherty.
And I'm Reggie Corrigan.
And welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, what a week of sport we've had and what a weekend we've got coming up too. Allez le bleu will be heard loud and proud all over the capital this weekend as the fiery fellows from France get set to lock horns against our glorious joints in green. Well, that's some alliteration. Six Nation weekend is upon us yet again, and Reg will be looking into what Joe Schmidt's men will be facing as they get set for a testing tie at the Aviva tomorrow afternoon. Can't wait for that. In football, and no, we still haven't come down off the cloud, have we, Reg?
No. Definitely not.
And what a week it was for Manchester United
We're
fans.
We're on for
an unbelievable.
He says true grinding teeth.
With the VAR controversy, we thought there was only one man who can clear all this up. And delighted to have our old friend, Dr. Errol Sweeney. Well, he's not that old. On with us just at the end of Wednesday night's massive decision. And what a great decision it was. The last few sleepless nights before the roar of the Cotswolds lift off on Tuesday lunchtime. And we cannot wait for that. And it must be big because our very own Dean Ryan from gambling.com has joined us in the studio this morning. Morning, Dean.
Good morning.
Yeah, great to have you. We cannot wait for the racing action. Absolutely. Oh, looking forward to that. All the tips and the previews getting set for the Cotswolds on Tuesday. And also this morning, Declan Drake will be with us to have a look at all things GAA and stay on board with us as we have Alan Cawley too, looking back at last night's domestic action in the Football League. Of course, Rovers against Pats. What a match. As usual, you can get in touch with the show. Text us on 087-11-55777. And of course, we are on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, and our Twitter account at Sport1068. So we'll have a look at the papers, lads. But
don't mind the papers. Let's go back, Dean. I have you in studio. I need a buddy on this one.
Go on.
You're a Spurs man. I'm an Arsenal man. What a joke that was during the week. I mean, I can't wait to talk to Earl about this. I have read into this in detail about the VAR and the handball and the everything else. But what a freaking joke that was!
It really depends what side of the water you're on, doesn't it? Like, I don't know. I think VAR is a terrible thing for football. I love that.
I like VAR.
I like technology, fine. No. I'm all for that. But football has always been about referees making dodgy decisions, and that's what you talk about for the following week. That's what
that's
football's
all
about.
Right, until you're on the other end of it.
But you know what? When I saw it, I thought, yeah, that's a pen.
No, I tell you, I like the concept of VAR as long as it's done correctly. Now, I read into this. Believe me, I'm not coming in here blind. I read into this. So, apparently, and we'll talk to Earl about this, apparently, if you make yourself bigger than the silhouette of your body as a defender, as in, if you stick your arms out to the side and you're kind of jumping up, waving at people and all the rest of it, well, then, obviously, you're making yourself bigger and you're making a bigger thing to block
the
shot.
Man.
Yep.
But by jays, that didn't happen. It didn't happen. He jumped up, he turned his back, and he wasn't even looking, and he still got done for the silhouette thing.
You made a very important point there. He turned his back. I think if you're going to jump for football and you turn your back and it hits your
arm,
you get everything
sin.
You deserve,
yeah.
Would be my view. I'm delighted Man United have gone through. I hope they get Tottenham in the next
round. You get penalised for being a coward, basically. Is that it? Turn your back, that's it.
I think so. If you turn your back,
Reggie,
and your arms away from your body.
Reggie would make some silhouette, wouldn't he?
Well, there'd be nothing getting past me.
He'd take up the whole goal.
If it was holding on to my toes, I'd still take up the whole goal. Look, fair play to United. I thought 2-1 was an amazing result. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I thought it was an amazing result. And I loved the game and I watched it all and I enjoyed every bit of it, but I just thought that penalty decision was very contentious, and then when he went, like, initially nothing, then he gets the call, go over, have a look, and we were there and we were going, Will he, won't he? Will he, won't he? But then, never mind that. What about a penalty? What
about fantastic
shot?
Penalty.
What do you think of Marcus Rashford? Like, because that's his first penalty.
First penalty ever, yeah. He was just cool as a cucumber.
I think he's just the coolest kid on the block by a country mile. Like, Buffon is an amazing keeper as well. He went the right way. He was only literally inches away from getting a hand to that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And up comes Rashford, and the way he smacked that in there, oh, what a
And like a lot of players, even to hit it so hard as well, to have the confidence of hitting it so hard, because a lot of players try and place it, don't they? And try and
Well, he decided, you know what I'm going to do here? I'm going to smack it to one point in that goal. Mm. And if he goes the right way and he gets fair play to him.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm going to hit it so hard that He'll have no regrets.
Yeah, he'll have to be amazing.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And Buffon almost was amazing because he is that kind of a player. But it was just such a brilliantly struck penalty.
You think that would do wonders for him as well? Like, because Mourinho never really gave him a fair crack, I don't think. And under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, it seems everyone gets a crack as long as they're smiling. He seems to be a smiling child now.
What about Ole? Let's go back to it. I mean, you know, you got to mention it. I mean, the job, it's almost in the bag for him.
Has to be.
How could you turn against him the way he's turned them around? I'm sure Jose is somewhere in a box looking at that going, Jesus, what's going on?
What did
here?
I do there? Yeah.
how could he bring that out in those players? But I think Ole, I think if United have any brains or any sense whatsoever, purely from a marketing point of view even, like bring in the young guy, bring in the young coach and market it as The new Manchester United. You know, with the foundation of the likes of Ferguson being involved in it, you know, that grounding, that thing that he has brought to it, but the new generation, and I tell you, they will.
And all the young players that he played. I mean, he played a 17-year-old, 19-year-old.
And he's still got a load of injuries as well.
Yeah, yeah. Ten players
that's
out.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
How much influence do you think Fergie has now back in this dressing room?
Well, a lot of people said he has a lot of influence, but apparently he's only been once to the training ground.
Okay.
But I would say Solskjaer sort of rings him up and asks him for a bit of advice now and again. But he said he's only been once down. And he came down to the dressing room to give a speech to the boys before they played Liverpool and told them what it meant down through the years about the rivalry and what this match meant down through the years to Ferguson and the power, you know, but that was it.
But I'm telling you, Ken, like, that's all it takes. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to, like, my experience with sport and with rugby is you have to go back to go forward. So you have to look back to your history. You have to look to the people that got you to the place that you're in, right? And you have to respect that. More important than anything else, you have to respect that. And that respect was lost for a while with the likes of Pogba and all of that kind of crap that was going on for a long period of time. You have to respect the history. It's happening in Liverpool. It happens to a degree in Spurs, Dean, and in Arsenal.
Yeah.
You have to look at the great teams and the great players and the things that they did and say, I want to be a part of that. I want to add my little bit to this history.
Absolutely,
you know,
like
you walk out the gate or the tunnel in Anfield and it says this is Anfield.
Yeah.
And you look up at that and you go, Jesus, you know, hundreds of years of history and great players have gone through and looked at that sign and I want to be part of that. And that puts the hairs on the back of your neck.
Yeah.
So what has happened now with United is, you're right, Ferguson isn't down there every week at training, but now and again, he'll come in and he'll just go, lads, you know who I am, you know what I've done, and I'm watching you, and that'll give you enough to give you a lift to bring you on to another level, and you'll want to perform for that legacy.
And you can't imagine that would ever have happened with Jose Mourinho.
Fergie Turner would have been given the short shrift.
He's in for the Real Madrid job now.
Yeah.
And he'll probably get it too because of reputation. And he'll probably do well. I mean, he's got an amazing squad of players there. They should be doing better than they are. I'd love to play against Ramos.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd love to give him a good. You know what? you think you're up for it, do you?
Yeah.
None of that crap. I'd love to give him the old shoulder.
You give him the elbow
in the ribs.
Stop! It's unreal the way he was on, like the way he was against Messi in the El Clasico there. Couple of weeks. Just, you know, stop. Give me a break. I'd love to have had a go at that, but
you'd love to get him.
That being said, I've been to Madrid, and I've been there for those games. And in fairness to him, I also like the mentality of Ramos.
Yeah, he's a winner.
He won't give up on it, and he's just, you know what, if you want to score, you're going to have to get through me. And he's projecting himself as the hard man. He's not, in my opinion, but he's projecting himself that way, and it works.
Yeah,
it works because players
are
afraid.
The type of player that if he's not in your team, you hate him. If he's in your team, you think he's fantastic. Mm. There's only a few of them about.
Yeah, that's true.
Cracking players to have in your squad.
Yeah, there isn't football anymore. Loads of rugby.
Anyway, talk about rugby. Big game this weekend. Loads of French all around the city.
Loads of French around. It's a hell of a weekend. There's no doubt about it. Look, we've been going through a couple of weeks of... will we, won't we, where are we at, what's going on, who's going to get picked, who's injured, who's not injured. We've picked a great team for Sunday, or tomorrow. We are going to win convincingly tomorrow.
Really?
I am predicting that now.
Okay.
And the reason is we have got all of our guys back that we need back, and France are not the team that... Everybody,
they're in total disarray, aren't they, at the moment?
Not total disarray, but they're certainly messed up. I had a great chat with Bernard Jackman there recently. He was over at a coaching conference over in Paris, and he told me that you know, when France came back after that 44-point drubbing or something, I think it was, at the hands of England, they came back and the players didn't. Didn't even really care. Yeah. You know, it didn't mean anything to them. So when you're talking about a squad of players like that, who it's gone beyond international levels. Rugby is in a little bit of a funny place at the moment, to be honest with you, Ken.
In what way?
Well, World Rugby kind of messed up in that they came out with all of these statements about a World League.
Yeah.
And then they had to backtrack, and then they had to cover themselves over, and then they had to talk about this and that and the other, and now they've come out this week with a new directive on what the actual World League thing will look like, which is completely different to what was put out there on day one. And it's kind of Southern Hemisphere rugby. You look at South Africa on the way back, Argentina are in trouble, Australia are in trouble. The All Blacks are losing players to overseas places like the Northern Hemisphere and Japan, where all the money is. So that game is in a little bit of, you know, turmoil. Mm. They have oceans of players, there's no question about it, but they're in a little bit of turmoil down there. And then you look up here at us and we're flying. We're absolutely flying. And we're trying to grow the game and we're trying to bring in the likes of USA. And let's be honest about it, if you have any brain whatsoever, you want to bring in USA because that's where the money is. If we can grow that game in America, a bit like snooker, can you imagine if snooker took off in America? We'd be set. That's it. Job done. It's a bit like NFL and baseball and all this kind of thing. It's just such a big market, and it's grown over and it's doing well over there. But they're running before they can walk. You know what I mean? They're just pushing it too quickly.
Too quickly. Yeah.
Wait.
Being too greedy.
Be careful.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are there going, well, there's no rugby people involved. Rugby has changed, lads, unfortunately. It's not the game that we used to know. It's now a business. But you still have to walk first and gently introduce these things. Mm. Don't smash into it the way they've done. Yeah,
and make a lot of mistakes.
And annoy a lot of people. Yeah. Piss people off, basically.
Yeah, okay. Dean, of course... Cheltenham starts on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Leon Blanche is going to be on the phone with us at about 9:30, going to talk to us a little bit about it. You'll be going over to Cheltenham, of course.
Certainly am, yeah. I'm going to manage 2 days. 2 days normally enough for me, Ken. I know it's 4. When it was 3, I had to go 3 days. I didn't want to be anywhere else on the planet, but once it hit 4, I found the liver and the wallet took such a beating over the first couple of days. I was ready to get back. So, I'm there. I'm going over on Monday morning. I will be... checking out the track on Monday, and then I'll be there for Tuesday and Wednesday. Yeah,
Tuesday is one of the best days, anyway, isn't it? Tuesday and Friday, I think, are the best 2 days.
Yeah, Friday, of course, because of the Gold Cup is a big, big deal. And we've had some fantastic Gold Cups over the last few years, which give it that extra bit of, you know, blasé. But I think Tuesday, when all the hopes and dreams are intact, when everyone, you know, still waiting for their first bet to get weighed in and paid in, that's the time where I think the atmosphere is at its very, very best.
Fantastic. I'm going to miss it this year. I can't go this year, but last year, I tell you, had 4 days of just, it was just absolutely
amazing. I've never been. I've never ever been. I'm going to do it, obviously, but I'm almost afraid to do it, if you know what I mean.
No, no,
you because it seems like such, everyone that comes back goes, oh, geez, you need about a month afterwards to recover. So I'm going to do it, but I just have to pick it right and make sure.
I think if you do it, you need to do 2 days the first time, because you'll do a day and you'll be like, that was pretty incredible. And then you'll leave and it'll all still be going on. You'll be very upset about that. So 2 days. But after 2 days, you can leave going, I actually went
next year. Next year. Let's do it.
OB over there next year. Joe,
if you're listening.
If Joe's listening. Yeah, yeah.
Good
man, Joe. Organise the OB for next year.
Yeah, I could do the logistics. Just someone write the check.
Okay, absolutely. So after the papers, we're going to go into, of course, the cards in complete detail, starting from Tuesday. Of course, as I said, Leon Blanche is going to join us for about 10 minutes on the phone as well from Boyle Sports. But we're going to go back to the VAR because we've got a special guest and, of course, a good old friend of the show. And he's not that old. No, he's only a young man, but he was a former FIFA referee. And he had the notoriety of sending off, I think he sent off Brian Robson once in a testimonial match down in South Africa. Dr. Errol Sweeney joins on the line. A very good morning to you, Errol.
Morning, guys. Good to be with you.
Is that true? Was it you sent off Brian Robson?
Yeah, 25 years ago this year.
It's a disgrace. That's an absolute disgrace, sending off a legend like that. Anyway, how are you? And anyway,
I'm great, but do you want to know what he called me? Well, I won't say it on there. I'll tell you off air.
Okay. We can only imagine.
Was he right?
yeah. Absolutely not.
Tell us a lot of controversy about the VAR decision. If you were in that referee's shoes, would you have called the penalty?
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Why?
I would not. look, you have to... Let's put the whole thing in context. And let me just read you very quickly what the law says.
Okay.
Handling the ball involves a deliberate act of a player making contact with the ball with the hand or arm. And remember, that's important, the hand or arm. And the arm extends right up to the shoulder socket.
Okay.
Right up to the shoulder. The following must be considered. The movement of the hand towards the ball, not the ball towards the hand. The distance between the opponent and the ball, in other words, it puts in brackets, an unexpected ball. The position of the hand does not necessarily mean that there is an offence. In the ball with an object, in other words, if you throw it low, it's not ba-ba-ba-ba. But those are the main things. Now, I'm reading, I listened to Reggie earlier on, what IFAB have said about the silhouette. Yes. The player should be allowed to have their arms by their side because it's their natural silhouette. Well, you know, that contradicts the opening line of this, the law, which is the current law, 2018-2019, the movement of the hand towards the ball.
Mm, yeah.
Now, you're not going to run around with your hand by your side all the time.
Well, you can't, Errol. You can't. No. It's not natural. You know what I mean? You can't jump in the air and get the height that you want to get by having your hands, like, pinned to your side. So that's stupid law anyway.
But let me give you another instance. Because one of the goals that was scored against Man U in South Africa when I did that game, or infamous or otherwise, was a handball against Steve Bruce. And his hand was above his head.
Yeah.
So he said, no, I never touched it. But, you know, your hands are down generally by your side, not entirely connected to your side all the time because you move them obviously to walk and to run and so on. But above your head, is that a natural position?
Well, let me ask you this, Errol. His position of his hand or his arm or whatever was blocking the ball going towards the goal, basically.
I still go back, Ken, to the opening line here. The movement of the hand towards the ball.
Okay.
Not the ball towards the hand.
Okay, so if say, the guy, he had his back to goal, or he had his back to the player who was taking the shot. Now, if he had his hands out by the side, and he's standing in front of the guy, facing him on, and he hits his hand there, is that a penalty?
You see, again, you're going back, did the hand move towards the ball, or did the ball move towards the hand?
Yeah, but if he's blocking, if the ball hits his hand and he's blocking it.
The other point, Ken and Earl, is on this. Was it actually going towards the goal? I mean, like, it was so far outside the box with the shot. Yeah. We can't tell the trajectory of the ball.
I don't think it has to be, though. I don't think it has to be.
I know, but it has to, like, at least...
It doesn't have to be on target.
Well, I mean, if it's heading to the corner flag, you know what I mean? It's nowhere near the goal, there should be a little bit of logic to say.
No, that has nothing to do with it, Reggie.
Really?
Nothing to do with the trajectory of the ball or where it was going to or where it might end up. That's nothing to do with it.
Right.
If the ball, the hand moves towards the ball, regardless of where the ball is going, it's still a penalty kick.
Okay, yeah. Okay, Errol, you know, we can argue this back and forth, back and forth. They're changing the law now, I believe, on the back of that. They're actually going to say, right, well, you know, if it's as it was in that, it probably won't be a penalty. Is that right?
Sorry, I know what you're there now.
They've spoken during the week about the fact that they're going to actually go back and review the law of the shot. So, you know, the handball, they're going to go back and review that and see, well, you know, if a player's arms are inadvertently out to the side, it goes beyond that silhouette rule.
I don't think so. I wonder you're mixing it up with handballs into the penalty area. They're talking about goals scored that have hit a player's hand voluntarily or involuntarily will not be allowed. So, you know, if a player uses his hand to put the ball in the net, okay, whether voluntarily or involuntarily, whether it just goes off his hand, will not be allowed. I wonder you're mixing it up with that.
Yeah. Okay, well, maybe I am, but I mean, in your eyes, anyway, it wasn't a penalty. That's all I want to know, so I can get into Ken here.
No, for a couple of reasons that, as I mentioned, the player had his back to the ball. Now, if you want to be very, very cynical, you can say, well, I knew the ball was coming at me, so I'll stick out my elbow 6 inches and it'll block the ball. I think the referee got it wrong, although I see UEFA have come out and said this morning that they support the referee. They said it was a penalty. But then, you know, again, being the cynic that I am, they wouldn't say anything else, would they?
Yeah. Are you a fan? Are you a fan of the VAR? Dean Ryan isn't, I know that.
I was initially, because I thought there was too much nonsense going on with players diving and cheating.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Being brought in to solve a lot of those problems and to use it for those instances, I would definitely... I'm on the fence at the moment. Remember, there's only four things that they use the VAR for at the moment. That's goals, whether there's a problem with the goal, penalty kicks, straight red card, or mistaken identity.
Yeah.
I think it should be extended to cover a whole area. Well, and if you do that, you're going to be stopping the game every 2 minutes.
Well, let me tell you this much, Errol, right? From my sport, obviously, they brought in the equivalent of VAR, the ref. And it's been fantastic, I think, personally. I think it's been amazing. You can clearly see on the replays whether it was a try, whether it was not a try, whether it was foul play or not foul play, all of the interference, all of the build-up to a try, or whatever it might be, right? And it's been a huge success, in my opinion, for rugby.
Yeah.
And I think it can be equally as much of a success for football if they get the right people reviewing it and looking at all the angles of it. It's not down, it shouldn't be down to one person. It should be like almost two or three guys making that decision.
But there is, Reggie. There is two or three guys in the television studio, wherever they are, viewing this. Mm. And speaking of football and rugby, I mean, there's no comparison.
But why isn't there, though? Like, I mean, it's like, you know, there's two sports. There's video reference and you can see it back in real time. The referees, like, it's so unfortunate for referees in real time trying to make these decisions. It's impossible.
Yeah.
So why isn't it the same as rugby? Why doesn't it work as well?
Because the players won't respect it. And why? Because they're allowed to get away with it. And why? Because referees like ourselves don't have the guts to make the decisions that need to be made. Mm. Why? Because 24 or 48 hours later, on a Monday afternoon or morning, a committee will meet and say, well, I think that red card wasn't correct, so we'll rescind it. So Law 5 says the referee's decision is final. Now, that's not entirely correct. It is final until some committee comes along and reviews it on a Monday morning and overturns a referee. What does that make the referee look like?
Yeah, okay, well, we'll have to leave it there, but there was a great picture going around the WhatsApp, and anyway, with Ferguson was actually in the VAR room making the decision for the referees up for it. And delighting every United fan, of course.
It's the toughest job in the world.
It's the toughest job in the world, yeah, yeah.
Really,
but there are five very important changes for next week. Maybe we could discuss it next
week. We'll discuss it another time, yeah, but we have to take a break, Errol, but we're always happy to have you on. And great to hear your voice and your opinion. In your opinion, it wasn't a penalty.
Not in my opinion, no.
Okay. Errol, thanks very much for taking the call. We'll speak to you very soon.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Okay, Errol Sweeney there, former FIFA referee. It's racing right now all the way to 10 o'clock. And, of course, Cheltenham starts on Tuesday. Today I have Dean Ryan in the studio and Leon Blanche is on the phone from Boyle Sports. Good morning, Leon.
Morning, Ken. How are you, pal?
Yeah, we're all excited. Dean is here, and all excited. Dean's going over. I'm sure you're off to Cheltenham as well on Tuesday.
Yeah, looking forward to it, Ken. Looks like there's going to be plenty of rain around on Tuesday. But I think the rest of the week, there's a couple of little showers here and there, but I think probably the softest ground is probably going to be the opening day.
Yeah, well, how is that going to affect? Because the big race, of course, will be Appleshade against Beauvardere. Larina is in there as well. I don't know what you guys think, but how will that affect that race? Because I think that's one of the highlights of the week, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, look, I think it is. I think if, fingers crossed, all three of them get there in one piece and they line up in the champion hurdle,
yeah,
and it'll be a cracking race. I don't think the ground is going to inconvenience any of the three. I think probably Larina will be happy. I think Willie Mullins and Ruby Walsh will be very happy that the rain is coming on Tuesday. I think to see her at her best, and I think she will be at finishing best. I think she'll win the champion hurdle. She's my selection out of the three of them.
Really?
I just look at Appleshade. She's a phenomenal mare. But I just look at her Cheltenham runs, and they haven't been that great. She got beaten in the Triumph hurdle, then she went to Aintree and won by 40-odd lengths.
Mm.
She came back the next year. She just about won the mare's hurdle when she beat Vroom Vroom Mag and Limini. And then last year, yes, you could say she was in season, but she was well beaten by Benny DeJew. So I don't know whether Cheltenham suits Appleshade. And for that reason, I think Beauvardere giving away £7, I think one of the mares will beat him, and I think it's going to be Larina.
Yeah, Dean?
Interesting that Leon says that about Appleshade, and a lot of people have levied that at her because of her previous Cheltenham efforts. So I think what that run at Leopardstown, potentially a game changer for her in the 2 mile division. You know, she was beaten by horses like Irving and Rashan over 2 miles before she did what she did at Leopardstown. So I know that's going back a little way. She hasn't always been at her best at Cheltenham. They've struggled to keep her absolutely cherry ripe during the season. We had Keith Donoghue on our preview night, and he was saying that perhaps they just left her off a little bit too much last year and didn't put enough work into her. She seems to be kicking and screaming at home. I couldn't have her anyway at the current prices. I'll be interested to see what Leon says about who's going to go off favourite for this race. If the rain does come, I can see Larina being back, that's for sure. I think it will suit her and Appleshade more than it would Beauvardere. But Beauvardere is a two-time champion hurdle winner going up against a mare that has struggled perhaps at Cheltenham, and Larina, who's never raced against the boys.
Yeah,
big ask.
Well, just looking at the prices there, Leon, Appleshade 2-1, Beauvardere 9-4 now, Larina 4-1, Sharjah, good price, each way price at 12s.
Yeah, and look, you know, Sharjah was a very impressive winner at Leopardstown last time out.
Mm.
He certainly won't mind the rain either, Ken. Look, he's a very young horse, and I suppose maybe a little bit underrated, to be fair to him. He's won a Galway hurdle, and he was very good winning the last day. But I just think you've got to look at Willie Mullins and Ruby Walsh. They know what it takes to win a champion hurdle. They've done it with any power. They know exactly what calibre of horse that is required to go and win the champion hurdle. And I just think with Larina, I agree with what Dean has said. This is her first time really stepping in against like the creme de la creme opposition. So this will definitely put all her credentials to the test. But I just feel, I remember what Ruby said when she won in England. It was only a two-runner race. And he said to whoever interviewed him after the race, he said, I wouldn't mind if she went straight to Cheltenham without another run. And you just get the feeling when Ruby talks about her, he gets quite excited from the potential that she possesses. And that's what we're looking at, Ken. I suppose we're looking at potential.
Yeah.
Beauvardere, you can't knock a two-time Cheltenham winner.
No.
But I just look at the form of last year's race. Mellon hasn't lifted a leg this year, and he got to within a half a length. So I'm going to go with Larina. I think 4-1 each way. I cannot see her being out of the first three.
Yeah, good choice. Dan?
I think Lorena's going to struggle of the three, actually.
Okay.
So I can understand that.
That's why we love the live radio. Well,
that's what
see, you can't pre-record this.
No. On the basis that she does jump a bit big and she hasn't gone at this kind of pelt against this kind of opposition, but Willie Mullins, Ruby Walsh will know what it takes.
Yeah.
So if they're confident, I understand where Leon is coming from, and she's the best price of those big three.
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense. If you believe Nicky Henderson, Beauvardere wasn't at his best last year and still won. So you can look
so
at it
plenty
as in
the tank.
You can look at it as in Mellon got too close for him to win this year's champion hurdle, or you can look at it as he still won as a sick horse and didn't make Aintree. If he comes back to the form, I think, of his previous champion hurdle win, I think that'll be good enough. And 2-1 is enough for me to play with. 2-1.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and Reggie will probably back me up on this. Reggie, Super Sunday, Robbie Power and Jessica Harrington, of course.
I think she'll go for the stayers, Ken.
Huh? Oh, she won't. Oh, she
I
won't race
Jessie,
in that.
Jessie will put Super Sunday in the stayers.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah.
What do you think?
Look. I mean, it is non-runner money back anyway, Ken. Exactly. So it doesn't matter. Even if you take a chance in Super Sunday. Look, Robbie Power is our racing ambassador. I done a preview with him the other night. He did say if it came up soft in terms of Thursday, it might just push this son of Galileo's stamina. It might just push him too far. So they'll be keeping a very close eye on the weather forecast. Don't be surprised if he turns up in the champion should the forecast deteriorate. But the number one aim is the Stayers Hurdle on Thursday.
Yeah, I was your snooker ambassador, and look what happened to me. So. Okay, so we won't be going by what Robbie Power says.
You have to win things to stay on as ambassador. You have to win stuff.
Okay, Dean, let's go on. What about the next big race then on the Tuesday?
Yeah, well, I mean, with Leon on here, I wanted to ask him about the Queen Mother, because with Altior in there, that's going to post on Wednesday, of course, and the big one. It's going to go off a very short price, Leon. Do you even see any interest in Altior this kind of time of year with a champion chase, or is everyone waiting for just to see the king come home in front and maybe go with without the favourite market? I mean, he is the best horse in training.
Yeah, look, I think he is. I heard a piece with AP McCoy said if he could come back and ride one horse at Cheltenham next week, it would have to be Altior, and you can see why. He's just an absolute beast. He just gets the job done. And it's great for racing. I think racing needs all the positive headlines it can get. And I think when you see a superstar like Altior, he'll get a huge reception when he comes into the winner's enclosure. It's unfortunate for the likes of Min that in a Supreme Novices, he finished second to him in the champion chase. And it looks as if the money is anything to go by this week, it looks as if Footpad is going to go in the Ryanair on Thursday, and it looks as if Min is going to have that unfortunate task of trying to beat Altior once again. A horse that would interest me here at a big price, if the rain does come for Tuesday, which everyone thinks it is going to happen, I think Undersoe, he's not getting any younger, but I just think if you let him off in front over 2 miles, let him go as fast as he possibly can. I remember when Patrick Mullins rode him at the Punchestown Festival in the Boyle Sports race last April. He set off in front and nothing could catch him. And I just think I'm not saying he'll beat Altior, but I think it would be a great spectacle to see Undersoe go off in front and just watch Altior hunt him down. Yeah. Because I think Altior will win the champion chase. But interestingly enough, one bookmaker is going 16-1 Undersoe. Now, that's not with non-runner no bet, unfortunately. The best price with non-runner no bet is 12-1. So I might just have a few quid in Undersoe myself each way in the Queen Mum. And if he doesn't run, I get my money back.
I love that, because when you saw him in the Tingle Creek and the rain was coming down, and it did suit Undersoe just to a degree. Altior still got the better of him, but you could see when they eyeballed each other, it was like two heroes staring at each other in battle. If that happens again, and Leon makes a good point, if that rain comes, Undersoe would be the one horse I think Nico de Boinville would be very worried about letting get a soft lead. So absolutely right.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, and a great following Undersoe has over the last few years as well. Big connections. They always wear the colours, and it's a fantastic occasion anytime Undersoe wins.
Yeah,
it really is, Ken. He's definitely a horse that has captured the public's imagination. He's owned by a family down in County Cork. They have the kind of sky blue and the orange colours. They all wear the scarves. He's been a tremendous servant. I remember, I think it was the first time, I think, Ruby Walsh sat on him. I think it was in Gorham Park. And I remember him getting off the horse and he was telling the press members who were standing around, he said, "I've never had a feel of a horse that I just couldn't control. He just went so fast." Now, since he's got older, like the rest of us, it's been a little bit easier to kind of contain him. But he still possesses that zest for racing. And I just love to see him and the Queen Mother jump off in front and just kind of watch Nico de Boinville trying to keep an eye on Ruby Walsh. How fast is he going? Where, you know, when do I make my move? Because Altior does have, he does hit a little bit of a flat spot in his races. Like last year, if you can remember back to the Queen Mother, a lot of people thought he was going to get beaten.
Yeah.
But once he kind of hits that rising ground, to be fair to Altior, he just takes off.
Yeah, I watched him when he was three out. And of course, I was the Irish captain last year. And he was, he's of course the British horse, but he was the last leg of my treble that day. And here I was as an Irish captain jumping up and down, screaming for Altior from the balcony. It was,
that's why you're not doing it this year,
Ken. Yeah, that's why I'm not there this year. But what a beautiful sight to see him jump three out and just like jump like a stag and went on. Fantastic finishing.
And I think as well, guys, you know, on Wednesday and even Tuesday, look, the RSA chase, which of course is the kind of Gold Cup for the novices. It's unfortunate that Santini has had a couple of niggles and problems in the kind of week leading up to the race. But I've listened to a lot of previews. I've been in a couple myself. And from an Irish perspective, the form of Delta Work is pretty solid. Mm. I mean, he beat Larichburg at Ferry House. It's unfortunate Larichburg won't be going in the Arkle on Tuesday, but then he came out and won another Grade One. And I think he's a solid favourite. But at those prices for a novice, you won't be getting my money. And I just think a horse here that could run into a place is trained by Joseph O'Brien. He's called Mortal. If you remember back to the run at Leopardstown, Mortal was running an absolutely huge race under Mark Walsh for Joseph. He made a mistake at the last fence and he finished second to Delta Work. Who knows what would have happened if they both had to jump the last without making any type of mistake. And I just think at 25 to 1 each way in a novice chase over 3 miles and a half of furlong, I think you'd want to be very careful backing 7-4, 15 to 8 favourites they've got to jump that many fences at Cheltenham.
Leon Blanche has gone for Lorena, and of course Dean has gone for Bouvard there. Leon has gone for Undersau, Leon, and Altior.
Yeah, just
for,
look, Ken, it's non-runner money back, so I'm just taking a chance that if the rain does come, I just think Undersau will be great to see him in the champion chase, and I think he could run into a place. It's going to be very difficult to beat Altior.
Yeah, of course. Okay, well, we're going to move on to the stairs. Dean, a lot of money has gone for Fahin. A great horse, Ruby Walsh on board. It was 8-1. It's been back now down into 4-1. It's up against Paisley Park and Super Sunday. Black Op is in there. Benny Didio, another great horse as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of money moving for Ruby Walsh on this one.
Yeah, the bookmakers are really tightening up Fahin. You know, the vibes are good. Everything seems to be on track, and that's what you need to know. He's 11 years old, Ken. And if he does win this, it will take the roof off at Cheltenham.
Yeah, it would,
because the machine in full flow is something else to see. I think if you're going to take, you know, a punt with Fahin, you might want to have a little place lay, because he might do what other great horses have done in the past, where if it's not happening, Ruby won't give him a hard time. You know, so I think he'll either win or pull up.
Okay.
So there's your options, you know. But he's a cracking horse. The interesting horse this year has come out of all. No one really knew much about Paisley Park last year. He's gone and won four races. What he did in the Cleve last time, which is a great trial for the stayers, was mighty impressive. Even if the front couple cut their own throats that day, he still did something that looks big bucks-esque. It looked very, very impressive. Super Sunday, your horse probably run here, I think, and that's in there around 7-8-1. The one I like from the race the last time against Paisley Park is Black Op, and I think that's the each way value. Noel Feely and Tom George, they've got a very smart horse who had an aborted run over fences, has now gone back to hurdles. He made the right decision. So at 10s, I'd be taking him each way. I'd love Fahin to win.
Yeah. Leon, it sounds you better get in there and make your breakfast.
No, we're all right. But I think, Fahin, he's another horse that the public obviously love in terms of what he's done for racing. You must remember, I think one of his first wins for Willie Mullins was a novice hurdle down in Limerick over 3 miles.
That's right, yeah.
So he does have a tremendous record, Ken, when he goes 2.5 miles or further. I'm just delighted for Fahin. It was a very bad fall the last day at Christmas time when he was chasing Apple Shade. He was going very well. Yeah. I'm not saying he would have beat the mare, but Ruby hadn't asked him a question. I just wonder, he's 11 years of age. The record books are against him. I'm going to go for another horse in the same camp who was running a big race last year in the same race, Bacardi's. Okay. It hasn't really
worked for him in terms of jumping fences. He was going a lot better the last day, fell at the last when he probably would have won that race at Leopardstown, and he fell at the last in this race last year. But I think Bacardi's, he might just run into a place at 12 or 14 to 1.
Yeah, good shout.
Two decent each way shouts take on the top ones, I think, there. Bacardi's is a cracking horse. I remember him beating Finian's Oscar back at, I think it was Punchestown, and he just stays all day. Loads of talent in the camp there. Patrick Mullins rides him well, gets on very well with him, I hope. So I wouldn't put anyone off that one each way.
Benny, will that be
going to go for the mares?
It's going to go for the mares. Yeah,
it looks like it's got a penalty kick in the mares this year. So that seems to be where they're going to go. Ruby actually said it's his best chance of the week. I think it's around 4 to 5 right now. When they take out the other two mares, like Salarina and Apples Jade, are still engaged in that race, she could go off an Altior-esque price.
Okay. Let's move on to the big one, of course, on Friday. Leon, presenting Percy, a lot of money gone for it. It's into 7-2. Clandazobo, also 7-2. Native River, of course, who won last year, 5-1, a great horse. Kenboy and Bells Hill in there, who ran a cracking race over the Christmas period as well, with Ruby on board, 11-1. Might bite. Great champion as well. Of course, Nicky Henderson's there. Great horse as well. And if the ground is a little bit different, might be a decent shout.
Yeah, look, Ken, it would be one of the... it'd be some training performance from Nicky Henderson if he could get Might Bite back to that kind of same level of form that saw him finish second in the Gold Cup and win an RSA after nearly running out to the Guinness tent for a pint of the black stuff. But in fairness to Might Bite, last year he travelled like the winner. But the ground was so testing. It was so tacky. Yeah, it was he just couldn't go by Native River. I can't have Might Bite at the moment. Album Photo is a horse that does kind of intrigue me. Unfortunately, he was the horse who gave Ruby the bad injury at Cheltenham. But I looked at his win at Tremor. I think it was New Year's Day. And on official ratings and on official figures, it was a seriously good performance. He's kind of the underdog in the race, but he's an improving horse. I'm going to work backward in terms of the betting. I'm looking also at Bells Hill. I really like Bells Hill, Ken. Yeah. He ran a superb race in the Irish Grand National, the Boyle Sports Irish National last April. He just made a mistake at the last fence carrying a huge weight. But then he came out at the Punchestown Gold Cup and he absolutely hosed up a couple of weeks later. Mm. Now, this year, he had his first run at Leopardstown in the race that Kenboy won, and then he came out and had that fantastic duel with Road to Respect, who of course is now going to the Ryanair on really quick ground. Bells Hill can run on any ground, and I just feel he's a horse that's really starting to fulfill his actual potential. Looking at the main contenders in the race though, Native River, if it comes up testing, he's going to run a huge race. I was only looking back at the King George the other night, and he was absolutely a mile behind Clandazobo turning in, but he actually finished the race extremely strong. The 3 miles, 2.5 furlongs, they definitely play to his strengths. I cannot be with Clandazobo, and for the one reason, he's 0 from 4 at Cheltenham.
Yeah.
It's definitely a track horses for courses. Presenting Percy, there's no doubt in my mind, Ken, in my own opinion, he's the best horse in the race. Yeah. He's got the most talent in the race. And you'd just be a little bit worried that he hasn't been able to at least get one run over fences. Yeah. Last year, he only had the one run over hurdles and the one run over fences, and he absolutely bolted up in the RSA. There's a lot of people saying he's the best horse that we've seen. He does seem to do it quite easily. I remember I was down in Gorham Park the day he won on yesterday's days, when he just jumped the last hurdle and he pricked his ears for his first run of the season over 3 miles. That was one hell of a performance. Look, it's going to be a great Gold Cup, Ken. Yeah. I'd love to see really presenting Percy do it, because I do feel he's got the makings of a chaser that we're going to be talking about in years to come.
Yeah.
That'd be 3 festivals back-to-back winning, by the way, as well. So he's going for 3 in a row at Cheltenham. But for a bit of value, I'm going to go Probably with Belt Hill.
Okay.
Belt Hill. I just think each way at 12 to 1.
Okay, Dan, give us a quick on the Gold Cup. We've got about 28 seconds.
I think Leon's picked the right one out of the Mullins camp. I think Album Photo is definitely the value out of those Mullins runners. I'd love it to come up decent ground and see Mike Bite do what he did last year and finish the race. If he does that 10 to 1, he's the punt for
me. Okay, there you go. Mike Bite and Belt Hill. Leon, always a pleasure. Thanks very much for coming on. Enjoy next week. A couple of pointers, of course. Belt Hill was Leon Blanche's for the goal.
Album Photo, I think. Album Photo, he liked that at Belt Hill. He went right off Belt Hill, that's
and
for sure.
You like Mike Bite?
I'm going to give Mike Bite one more go.
Okay.
Yeah.
He did mention Bacardi's as well, probably the because stayers. He drinks it. I don't know whether. Immortal, 25 to 1 each way as well. He mentioned that as well. Lorena was. That was Leon's.
Yeah,
exactly. And you like Bouvardair and that one.
I'm a Bouvardair fan for sure. I think you make it three in a row in the champion hurdle. Yeah.
Okay, so there you go. We're going to give a lucky 15 because we've got a lot of texts coming in about the lucky 15 today. You're going to go to Sandown.
Imperial Cup Day there. The last time really a horse can go and win and then double up at Cheltenham. I really like Paul Nichols' favourite there. Malaya going to go off around 6 to 1, the 225. Over at Air, there's a good shout for another Matty in the 245. That's a 9 to 2 chance at Air in the 245. Expatriate, trained by some very shrew people here in Ireland, goes in the 340 in Gowran Park. That one is at 2 to 1. And then Forest de Zegler in the 320 at Air. That's a 4 to 1 chance. Last chance to fill your Cheltenham bank.
Okay. So Forest
de Zegler, 320 at Air. Yeah. Okay. Expatriate, 340 at Gowran Park. Another Matty, 245 at Air. And Malaya to win the big race today at Sandown. That's at 225. Okay,
Forest de Zegler. Who else did you go to in Air? What was the other one?
Another Matty.
Another Matty. We've had enough of those.
another lucky 15 in place.
Hey, look, we did all right last week. We nailed a couple of winners a place, and then I don't know what happened to Flying Tiger. Only connections can tell you when that one will win a race, and it will.
The
clue is in the name.
We had two winners in a place.
It was a decent week. Decent weekend for us last
week. Okay, Malaya, another Matty, Forrest de Zegler, and...
Expatriate at
Gowran Park. Okay, we'll put them on our Facebook and, of course, our Twitter page.
Can
as
I just
well.
Give four horses for Cheltenham
absolutely.
That were not mentioned?
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So, National Hunt Chase Tuesday, Impulsive Stars, a double figure price to run in the last race of Down Tuesday's Tens Plus.
Okay.
I think he ran a very big race, the Warwick Classic winner. So, that's the National Hunt Chase on Tuesday.
Okay.
Also on Tuesday, in the Ultima Handicap, Activio is 33 to 1, trained by Tom George. Touch of class about this one. He's in the 250 on Tuesday. Ultima, 33 to 1, Activio.
Okay.
Sky Pirate, big word for that on our race hour preview from Stephen Cass, and he's a superb judge. He's 10 to 1, probably be ridden by Patrick Mullins, trained by John O'Neill in the Kim Muir, 5:30 on Thursday.
Okay,
get
Sky Pirate.
Okay, one.
Impulsive Star, Altima, and Sky Pirate, yeah.
Okay, then you got Rhinestone and the Coral Cup. If Joseph O'Brien runs in there, go for a very short price. Another one I must mention from Stephen Cass, 20s, is a massive price right now. Non-runner, no bet, you're getting money back if he doesn't go. So that's Rhinestone in the Coral Cup.
Okay.
And then one of the best bets of the week for me, Commander of Fleet, Friday, Albert Bartlett race. That is a 7-1 chance right now. I can see that going off around 5-2.
Really?
And I think you should get involved.
Commander of Fleet.
Trained by Gordon Elliott.
Okay, fantastic. So there you go. We'll be putting these on our Facebook page as well. Impulsive Star, Altima, Sky Pirate, Rhinestone, and Commander of Fleet. And of course, the Lucky 15, Expatriate, Malaya, another Maddie, and Forrest de Zegler. De Agla, is it today?
Forrest
Dagla.
De Zegler.
De Zegler. Yeah. De Zegler.
As long as it wins.
Yes.
Okay.
Who cares?
Okay.
Who cares what the pronunciation is?
Exactly.
Well, listen, we might be struggling for a few pronunciations, a few of the names today in the French game. But before we talk about that, I know you were at the semi-finals of the Leinster Schools Cup.
I was.
And
how
was that?
I tell you one
good
thing.
Good old Gonzaga from Renle.
Well, I tell you one thing. Gonzaga from Renle qualifying for their first ever of the Leinster Senior Schools Cup, qualifying for their first final and... so deserving of it. It's not funny.
Are we letting you go, Dan? Are you leaving us? Are you in a hurry?
Well, you know, rugby's not my bag. So if I say anything about this, I'm
going to
get upset.
You didn't go to Gonzaga.
No, enjoy the week, lads.
Okay, and listen, thanks very much for coming in.
And I'll be texting you during the week for a few catch-up tips because we need them.
I know I'm interrupting the rugby, but it's only time. Grand National Day and Cheltenham, suddenly everybody is my best friend.
Yeah, they're not after the
You'll
be getting 180 calls.
You'll be flat out busy, there's no doubt.
But listen, I hope some of the horses run as quick as you moved off that chair as soon as Reggie started talking about the rugby.
So that I'm in with a good chance. Have a great weekend.
Okay, Cheers, thanks Dino. Pleasure.
Yeah, but I tell you one thing, Ken, I was privileged, is the word I'll use, to be working on both of the senior schools cup games on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week, where we saw Gonzaga play Clongowes in an amazing game, and St. Michael's play Belvedere in another amazing game. Mm. 3 points was all that separated Gonzaga from their big rivals there, and 1 point was all that separated St. Michael's from a Belvedere team who will feel so hard done by, but just so heartbroken by it. It was unbelievable. But I tell you one thing, if you want to watch real sport, and if you want to watch you know, the sport that you love, which I do, I love rugby, but if you want to watch it played at the best, by the best people, and with the best supporters, go to schools. Really? Go to schools. It's
fantastic.
Just incredible.
Yeah. The, it was packed, was it?
Oh, jammers. Jammers in Energia Park there, Donnybrook, as I used to call it, the old yeah, basically, that's where it is, but it's called Energia Park now. But I'll tell you one thing, honest to God, you've no idea. Like, I mean, these young lads are just on a different level in terms of the effort that they've put in. Every team, doesn't matter whether they're like gone out in the quarterfinal or the first round, every single team that's gone into that competition has put in so much effort all year long to be there in Energia Park and put their wares on display for the world to see. And it's the most exciting, brilliant, fantastic form of rugby you'll ever see, and you can keep your Pro 14 and your Ireland versus France. As far as I'm concerned, this beats them all. Absolutely beats them all. And Gonzaga came out and you know, defied all the odds, because they were the underdogs, there's no doubt about it, they were the underdogs coming into this, and they defied all the odds, and they got themselves a very first in, now I'm going to, it's over 125 years, I'm not sure exactly, 18 something it started, this competition, and they got their very first Leinster Senior Schools Cup Final. Their very first one. It's
that's
unreal.
Unbelievable.
It's unreal. And they're in it now, and deservedly so they're in it. Yeah. And they played incredibly well, and you know, they've got some serious talent. There's a scrum half there called Jack Connolly, and an out half called Harry Colbert, who run the show basically for Gonzaga. Declan Fassbender is the coach, and a brilliant coach he is, and he's been working there for years with Gonzaga to try and get into a level that they're at. But there's a young guy, they've got Jack Barry, who's the captain, Jack Barry, and a brilliant player at number 8. They have a second row called Liam Tyrrell, who's the vice captain, and he's outstanding as well. But they have a loose head prop. And I'm a loose head prop. You might have noticed it. They have a loose head prop called Henry Godson, and he scored 3 tries on the day, hat trick. Unheard of for a loose head prop.
They must have went mad, didn't they?
Win that match, and their response afterwards and their reaction afterwards was just unreal.
We must be a hero to them now.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, look, they've got the final still to go, and they've got all that still to go, and you know, they're up against a very, very good Michaels team. Mm-hmm. And you know, you mentioned Chris Cosgrave before, and Robert Gilsonen plays at scrum half for them. Yeah. And
Michael's son plays for them as well.
And they are an amazing team, St. Michael's. They really are, and they've got Leinster and Ireland representatives right across the squad. But it's just lovely to see two different teams in it. You know, I mean, we're used to the Clongowes, the Belvederes, the Black Rocks being in the final. Michael's Mary's, have always been there about Mary's, all that, you know, all the great teams, Terry and Ewer over the years. Great teams. My own team, Prez Bray, who came very close in the first round against Black Rock. They almost toppled them, the mighty Rock, but they didn't quite get there. They lost 25-19, I think, was the score. But this school's competition has been incredible. But we're going into a final on St. Patrick's Day against with Gonzaga playing against Michael's. and they're not the norm team. That no. That's not the normal no. combination okay, of teams yeah, yeah. that you would see. And obviously because Gonzaga's first one, it's not the norm. But I tell you one thing, I'll go out on a limb here, Ken. I'll go out on a limb. Yeah, I've seen them all play. I've seen them all play. And I'm just leaning towards Gonzaga
go
for this
on
one.
The Renla boys.
Yeah. It's my heart as well as my head. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Michaels are an amazing team. There's no doubt about it. They are a fantastic team. But I just think this Gonzaga side have something about them that it could be their year. And wouldn't it be great for schools rugby if that was the case? It would be
and
amazing.
And all those years of history as well. Yeah,
absolutely. It would be amazing.
And I presume Michaels have won it umpteen times.
Michaels have always kind of played second fiddle to their sister college, Black Rock. And that's always been the way. And for years, like, believe it or not, back in my day, Jesus, that's 30 odd years ago now, Ken.
A good memory.
I'll tell you, I'll tell you one thing. You got a good memory, and this is what I'll say to you, right?
Yeah.
I remember it like it was yesterday, because schools rugby is the most important thing ever as a rugby player, and the most formative thing you'll ever get. And I played for Prez Bray, and we lost in the semi-final to St. Michael's in Lansdowne Road in what was an incredible game of rugby, and we had a good team. Now, Prez wouldn't be one of the powerhouses in schools rugby by any means, but we had an incredible team, and we were unfortunate to lose to St. Michael's, a very good St. Michael's team, in the semi-final, who then went on to win the final as well. So they were a good team.
Yeah.
So St. Michael's don't have a rich history in the Senior Schools Cup, but in recent years they've become very much the force to be reckoned with. And Black Rock, they're both of the same religious order. So Black Rock have been watching them and kind of keeping tracks on them and everything else. And for them to beat Black Rock, and I think that was, if I'm not mistaken, I think it might have been the first time that they've ever beaten Black Rock in a Senior Schools Cup campaign at that stage. Mm. Black Rock will be watching them going, oh, we better watch these guys. They're coming up. They're getting good. They're getting better. But I'll tell you, I go back to it again, Ken. Like, it's the purest form of rugby you will ever find.
It's the grassroots.
But it's so good.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I'm getting, you can hear me, I'm getting animated. Yeah. I'm getting excited about it. You got to see the quality of this stuff. It's not like Mickey Mouse stuff down on a Saturday, going down to the local club and blah, 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 and lads are kicking the ball around or pushing the ball around or trying to pass the ball. This is on a level that you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
And they're so well coached, so disciplined, so clued into everything that has to happen. And they're only like 16, 17, 18 years of age, these kids. Incredible. They're unreal. And they play the game just purely for the game. It's all about run the ball. There's no strategy. There's no theory. There's no, okay, well, we got a lead now. We'll grind down the clock. It's just play. And you're watching this game, and you just can't help but get excited about it. And I cannot wait for St. Patrick's Day for the final. 3 o'clock. In the RDS, they move it from Energy Park down to the RDS for the final. 3 o'clock, St. Patrick's Day. I hope so. And if it's not sold out, do yourself a favour on St. Patrick's Day before you go off chasing the Shamrock, and go and watch some quality sport, and go and watch this, because you will not be sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. So would it be suffice to say then that we have an abundance of talent coming through?
No question. Belvedere. I watched them. What a team. Clongowes Wood, same thing. Very unfortunate. Talent in abundance. Kilkenny, Newbridge, Mary's. You go through all of that Leinster schools campaign that I watched dearly the whole way through it, and I'm just going, oh my God, how are these lads so good at this age? Because we were only in the halfpenny place, I'm telling you, in the halfpenny place compared to what these guys are doing. They're so conditioned, Ken.
Yeah.
You want to see, there's a guy playing for Gonzaga, the loose head prop, and he's ripped to bits. Absolutely ripped to bits. He's got 3 tries, for Christ's sake, you know what I mean? Unbelievable. Yeah. He's ripped to bits. And their entire front row are exactly the same.
Yeah.
So their strength and conditioning and work that they do at such a young age, these kids are absolutely committed to their profession. They want to be professional sportsmen at that age.
It's amazing.
Imagine.
Amazing. Yeah.
You know, can you imagine snooker players? I mean, I'm sure you see them.
I know, but that's what I was going to ask
15,
you.
16, 17 years of age, putting in 8, 9, 10 hours a day. That's what you did.
Yeah. But that's what I was going to, that was my next question. You know, like in snooker, we can tell
by watching the guy, the way he plays, the way he strikes the ball, you know, the way he gets through the ball with the cue. Can you see that in these guys already?
No doubt.
Yeah.
Absolutely no doubt whatsoever. You're looking at tens and you're saying, right, he's got it. And you're also looking at guys who are the stars and go, no, he doesn't.
He is the star, but he's not going to make it because
his size is not there or his body is never going to develop to the level that it needs to be and all the rest of it. But then you're also getting surprises, Ken. You know, you're getting the likes of this guy, Godson, that I mentioned, that scored the three tries. You know, he would not be the biggest guy in the world. Like, I mean, in my playing day, I was sort of 18 stone loose head prop. This guy is like maybe 14 and a half stone, maybe, if he's lucky. And you needed to be my size, and you still do need to be my size, just to deal with the impact, the impact of the scrum and everything else. But he was disrupting the scrums. He was forcing himself in and making a mess of the opposition scrums at that age and at that weight. And I'm going, okay, well, maybe it's not about weight anymore and size. Maybe it's about technique and all that kind of stuff. And it just opens your eyes up to different ways of thinking about the game and gets you very excited, really excited about different ways of thinking about the game. Because rugby, and this is one of the things I love about it, in its purest form, is a game designed for every shape and size. Yeah. And I know we've kind of been talking about how it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, but you look at a Joey Carberry, he's not bigger. He's your size, Ken. Yeah, you know what I mean? He's he's a big, fine man, but he's not like 18 stone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And scrum halves of the St. Peter Stringer went into his 40s, and he would certainly be young. And that is what rugby's about. It facilitates every size and breed of person, and that's what I love about it. There's no typecast about it. You wouldn't see an 18 stone soccer player, would you?
No,
you wouldn't see it. It doesn't happen. But rugby can facilitate every form of player, and if you're willing to put the work in and try hard at it and do your skill set and basically work your ass off, there's a place for you in a rugby pitch. And I love it. I love it for that reason.
Well,
if anybody
listening and is not sold on going to that school's final at St. Patrick's
Day, you won't be sorry. I promise you, you will not be sorry.
Something to savour and something to look forward to. And good luck to both teams, but I have to be a little bit partisan and say good luck to Gonzaga. First year in the history, and of course, I'm the same.
I mean, you know, St. Michael's and Gonzaga, they're two fantastic teams, but in their first time to get there, we'll back the underdog and we'll go with Gonzaga and we'll give a little bit of leniency that way.
Okay,
I agree with
good
you.
Good luck to the Renla lads. Okay, let's move on to today, of course, because that's tomorrow.
Tomorrow,
of course.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be talking about the international and Ireland against France. Lots of Les Bleus supporters in town. Always a great occasion. Great team of years gone by, but not so much this year.
Oh, let me tell you, you know, I never beat France. Ever.
Really?
Never beat France. Never. I played them so many times, a bit like the All Blacks. And whenever we beat them, I was injured. So maybe there's something, maybe that's telling you something. There's something in the story. I was either dropped or injured. But I've never beaten France at Six Nations. And the first time was in 98. I played them over in Saint-Denis in a beautiful new stadium. They just built an incredible stadium in Stade de France, it's called. But it's in an area called Saint-Denis. And it was phenomenal. I was blown away. 85,000 people, French lunatics. 85,000, not people, French lunatics, in a stand with releasing cockerels and chickens out onto the pitch and drums and the noise and the trumpets and the colour and the atmosphere. It was beyond belief. I'm getting goosebumps now.
A far cry from Bechtel.
Yeah, a little bit different. But I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it, you know. And we almost did them in 98. We lost, I think it was 20 points to 18. We were winning the whole way through it. I'm happy to say that we were winning when I went off. Warren Gatland was the coach at the time, the very successful coach of Wales and the Lions and everything else. He was our coach at the time for Ireland. And we were almost there, and myself and Keith Wood and Paul Wallace were substituted, and they brought on Peter Clossy and Ross Nesdale. and Nick Popowell came on to the front row, so I'm blaming the three of them. They know it. I've said it to them loads of times. We were winning when we went off, and we were losing when they finished the game. But it was an amazing, amazing atmosphere. And that, like, let me tell you this much, Ken. If you ever want an experience in rugby to talk about, it's playing against France, because it has everything. It's got the atmosphere, it's got the colour, it's got artists sitting on the sideline painting pictures of players in real time.
Yeah.
It's got cockerels, it's got drums, it's got trumpets, and it's also got the filthiest group of ever on the pitch who will punch you and bite you and pinch you and do whatever it takes to win.
Yeah, yeah.
And they got there in the end and they won that. We lost to them again in the 2003 quarter final in the World Cup over in Australia. And again, the more deserving team. They played brilliantly. And that is what France are. France are an amazing team of rugby players who can play the game to a level that you can only dream of when they play it well. We are now at a different level. We are a good team. And I'm telling you this much, I predict a convincing win for Ireland on Sunday. I think we're going to bounce back. We've got the likes of Rob Kearney back at full back, Earls on the wing, Ringrose coming back into the centre alongside Bundy, Aki, Johnny Sexton, who needs to prove himself, not prove himself, but needs to redeem himself almost.
He's been getting a bit of stick.
And I know Johnny's like, he's just that kind of guy. He's going to bounce back from that. And Murray. Johnny and Murray together, you know, the two of them together, they need to make a point, and they're going to make a point on Sunday.
Tony Ward, I read a little article in the paper there.
I saw that. Yeah.
Did you see it? Yeah, Tony Ward game.
I get Tony's point, and Tony's head right in what he's saying. Yeah. You know, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we're role models.
Yeah.
No matter what you do, even when you're finished, you're still a role model. You do it all the time. Yeah. I mean, geez, like, you know, everybody knows you can approach you and talk to you because of who you are. Imagine if you were that grumpy little shit that wouldn't talk to anybody and, you know, had this attitude and all the rest of it. That wouldn't be good. People would talk about that. That's not Ireland. That's not who we are.
No.
So Tony Ward was dead right in what he said, and I think Johnny will take that on board. But Johnny, I know he didn't mean anything by it. He's just so wrapped up in wanting to be successful, and he's such a driven guy that sometimes it comes out in the wrong way.
Okay.
And that's all that was.
Okay. But he will redeem himself, no doubt. Yeah.
I'm telling
you're predicting a convincing win.
I'm really excited about it.
Because of Ireland, because of the changes they've made, and because of the state of French rugby at the moment.
Well, the right guys are back in. I don't really care about the state of French rugby. It is bad, and I will admit that. And they've gotten through a little bit of a thing and all the rest of it, and they've come out the other side. They've picked the same team, which is unusual.
Mm.
Very unusual for France. They've no messing up or no changing or anything else. They're trying their best to do it. But I'm telling you now,
when we had Bernard Jackman on the show a couple of weeks ago, I mean, he was quite critical of the French team, wasn't he? And their attitude as well.
Their attitude, yeah. Absolutely, but you know, come to Dublin, come to the Aviva, go there on Sunday and come without the right attitude and you're going to get run out the gate. And like, when you look at this team, Rory Best is back in and Hooker, and I do think, and I don't mind pinning my flag out there, I think Cronin was hard done by, that he was excluded from the entire squad, because I don't believe it was his fault, everything last week. But Rory Best is back in there at hooker, and that'll make a difference. Tyke Furlong at tight head. Kian Healy, who's playing amazing rugby. James Ryan in second row, alongside Ian Henderson. Oh, my God. What a combination the two of them are together. And then a back row of Peter O'Mahony with CJ Stander back from injury, and, of course, Josh Van der Fleer, who's an amazing open side. That's as good a pack of forwards you'll ever, in the world. I'm telling you, in the world, that's as good as you'll get. Then you got Murray and Sexton in the halfback combination, and a rebooted Bundy Aki alongside Gary Ringrose, who will feed the likes of Earls and Stockdale, who's player of the year last year, with Rob Kearney coming in to add to that. I'm telling you, lads, you know, lump on Ireland. It's going to be our day. I have no idea. I didn't even check that. I'm just excited about how it's going to go tomorrow. It's very important
that Ireland really put in a very impressive...
They're out to prove a point.
Yeah, yeah.
They're out to prove a point. They want... Like, they've had enough weight on their backs now for the last number of weeks, and I don't blame them. They want to just, lads, let's reset here and show what we can do, and they're going to show what they can do tomorrow.
Okay. What are you predicting? What's the score? Plenty of tries.
Well, it's going to be at least 3 tries to Ireland. I don't know what the spread is going to be, but it'll be more than 10.
Check now.
It'll be more than 10, in my opinion. And I think, you know, if we can do a job
13,
early...
13.
13?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bit rich. I think we'll beat them by 10 points or more, because France are still to be respected. You know, they've got a decent... Like, Bassereau and these guys in the centre, and... Entomac at 10 and DuPont at 9. You know, there's of course the great Louis Picamal from Montpellier at number 8 for them. They're a side that should be respected. They deserve more than a 13 point spread, but we will put 10 points on them.
Okay. You. Anything else then? Because we have to go for an ad break. We've had a
sorry, really I can talk good, all
no,
day.
No, it's fantastic. It's great. It's great to listen to you. We can hear the enthusiasm in your voice, and particularly about the skills rugby. A great analysis.
Well,
of what went on.
Do yourself a favour, listeners. You know, if you've nothing else to do on St Patrick's Day, and I know it's a wonderful day in general, and there's parades, and there's going out and meeting your friends and everything. Do yourself a favour. 3 o'clock in the RDS, there's plenty of tickets still available. Go down before you go off and have your day out. Go out and make a point of going to that match, because you will not be disappointed. You will love it. It there really is fantastic.
Fantastic, absolutely. Okay, we'll leave it there. That's, of course, next week, Gonzaga against St. Michael's. But Ireland to win by a good score and at least get 3 tries tomorrow. Best of luck to Ireland, of course, against Le Bleu. The French are here in town. Okay, fascinating match in store. Loads of texts coming in. That was a fantastic chat. Reggie was really very enthusiastic. One listener says about the school's rugby, I'm booking my tickets today, and so you should. St. Patrick's Day, of course, Gonzaga against St. Michael's. And something else that will take place on St. Patrick's Day as well, of course, is all the schools, the championships in Croker. And Declan Drake joins us on the phone now. Very good morning to you, Declan.
Yes, indeed, you're right, Ken. Patrick's Day, but a very unusual one this year because, of course, we don't have any Dublin representation in either the hurling or the football for the first time in a number of years.
But that won't stop the crowds, Declan.
No, it won't. I mean, they're two fantastic games, I think, in prospect. And I would be equally as passionate in promoting those games as Reggie is about the school's rugby. I think it's the essence of what we are. We know all about that in the GAA, and people coming from Galway and Kerry and Kilkenny and whatnot. Fantastic day out as well, and great opportunity for people to go and visit the National Stadium.
Yeah, of course, and also support, you know, just the game itself, you know, whether you're from that area or whether you're not, but just to see the game played, as Reggie was saying, in its purest form.
Yeah, you'll have some fine exponents in all the teams on the day. I mean, they're all worthy, initially county champions, of course, and then provincial champions. So they've earned their right to be in Crow Park and Patrick's Day. That includes Ballyhale, of course, who ended Ballybode and St. Enda's Leinster Championship aspirations back in December. And I have the attitude that I always, you know, in one sense, look out for the team that might have beaten us on the way, you know. Yeah. And so I would have fond affection for Ballyhale. I really, everyone loves King Henry, of course, who's the manager this year down there. Mm. And we wish them well. We wish all the teams well, but it'd be nice to see Ballyhale back on top of the hurling tree again.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck to them. Okay, let's talk about our senior footballers now. Dublin 214, Roscommon 112. They were locked at 1-9 at one stage, and it was quite a testy game in bad conditions as well, but delighted to see Dublin came through in the end.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, I think it's our third win of the campaign now, so a couple of weeks ago things mightn't have looked so bright, but a couple of wins in a row and all of a sudden you're talking about the potential for a league final, of course, which is very much on the cards should they win against Tyrone and against Cavan in the last game. But yeah, took up to the Hyde last week, testing conditions, as we know. They showed great character, and great to see Conor Callan back amongst the goals again. Scored a wonderful goal up there last week. Dean Rock got the second goal. And I suppose the other big news of the day really was the return of Stephen Cluxton to the fold, making his first appearance of the year as well. So confidence growing all the time again amongst the group. And, you know, the possibility of that Dublin-Kerry League final, that's certainly a mouth-watering prospect if it comes to pass.
Yeah, and after a rocky start to the league campaign, Dublin seem to be getting into a little bit of a groove. What's the sort of permutations for those that are listening, Declan, that don't know? What are the permutations for that possibility of a Dublin-Kerry League final?
Well, certainly at the moment, Ken, I'd say it's a 50% chance of it happening. Obviously, with Kerry being top of the group, you know, having won all their games, they're a shoo-in, I think, to reach the final. Dublin have two games left. They play Tyrone next Saturday evening in Croke Park at 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And then they go to Breffni Park, Kingspan Breffni Park, to play Cavan the following week. So I think the way it works is if they win those two games, that they'll be in the final themselves. So Dublin and Kerry in the league final. I mean, they met in the final of that competition a couple of years ago in Croke Park. Kerry emerged victorious by a single point on the day. But of course, we all know what happened a few months later when the big prize was being handed out.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, let's move on to the hurlers, because they had a right battle against Laois, hadn't they? Matty Kenny's men, 13 points to 11, and again, atrocious conditions up in Parnell Park.
Yeah, I know, it was there. And I think the doctor could have given me a cert off work for the week after, to be honest with you. You know, it was that horrific. The referee from Galway, he needed two pitch inspections before the game. The last one was about 15, 20 minutes before throw-in. Which is a point as well, I think, to be, you know, all joking aside about these things, because, you know, the potential to call these games off is far too late. We saw it last week in Wexford, we saw it in Cork as well. People are actually in around the ground. Some people are actually in the ground when these decisions are being made. But thankfully, the game went ahead last week from a Dublin perspective. Mm. It was a dogged display, great win for them at the end of the day, and they finished the Division 1B campaign with just the one reversal. Unfortunately, we don't know yet who we're going to be playing in the quarter final because the weather wreaked havoc with it last week. But tomorrow's last round of 1A games is going to be fascinating. We know Limerick are already in the quarter final. They're going to play Laois tonight. So the other positions are all up for grabs, including where Dublin are going to play, because, Ken, we've had three home games in this season's competition, and we're very unlikely to have another home game in the quarter final. Unless we draw a team who also has had three home games, then you have a toss of the coin to decide. But most likely you're going to be going away, maybe to Nolan Park, maybe to Thurles, who knows. But look, they're the challenges you want at this time of the year. They're the games you want to get a step up. And if they can produce the type of performance that they did against Waterford a couple of weeks back, they won't be too far off.
Yeah, absolutely. And a step up in class, as you say. And Matty Kenny, you know, he admits to that. Whoever it is, going to be a really good challenge, but it's something that they're really looking forward to. He seems to have got a great sort of band of confidence within that squad now.
Yeah, absolutely. Band of brothers are fighting so hard for each other. They're training well. The attitude is right. So all things are good at the moment. And yeah, he's relishing the prospect of that quarter final. That's a serious indicator of just where they are at this particular stage of the year, Ken.
Okay, when will we know? After this weekend, I presume?
Yes, indeed. As I said, the final round of 1A games are tomorrow. We'll know the other three teams to come through from 1A, and decisions about venues and that then will be made on Monday. It's interesting, actually, because I mentioned the Dublin footballers there. They have a home date with Tyrone next Saturday. Now, there's a couple of ways that can be a double header next week. Number one is if the hurlers do get a home game, they may very well put that on before the footballers in Croke Park next Saturday. Or alternatively, the Dublin ladies, they're actually, who beat Westmeath, by the way, also in atrocious conditions out in DCU last week. They're due, I think it's Monaghan, they're playing next week. No venue for that yet, but there's a possibility that they could play in Croke Park ahead of the men, like they've done a couple of times this year already. But there again, all those decisions will be made on Monday.
Yeah, okay, a fantastic possible doubleheader. You're talking about the ladies, of course, the Jackies, 1-8 to 1-3, they beat Westmeath.
Yeah, absolutely. Dogged game again, but did well to come through it. Delighted to see Noel Healy back in the fold as well and getting a goal. Noel, of course, moved to Cork recently with work and transferred to Mourne Abbey, the All-Ireland club champions. So it'll be interesting to see how that works for her over the next few months. But there again, like the hurlers, indeed, the men's footballers, look, they're working hard. There's a very strong spirit within the group. They're digging out results. That's 3 in a row now that they've won. So on to Monaghan next week and looking very good for a place in the last four of the competition, which, of course, Ken, they are defending champions in.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, and what a fantastic season they had last year, Declan.
Yeah, it couldn't have been any better, really, winning the three trophies. Mm. So no pressure on them this year.
Okay, Dublin against Tyrone, that's next week. Possibilities of Matty Kenny's men or the ladies playing at a doubleheader in Croker. Anything else you want to mention, Declan, before I let you go?
Well, all three teams will actually be out next week, whichever way it works out. We have the extra day of the bank holiday Monday, of course, next week as well. That's a possibility. No, I think, Ken, we're pretty much up to date. I'd just like to wish Kathleen Colreavy best wish today. She won a President's Award from the GAA there last night. Tremendous servant to Dublin Ladies Football over the last number of years. And if anyone epitomises the spirit of the association and the spirit of volunteerism, it's Kathleen. So well done to her on that award.
Yeah, congratulations to her. And have a good weekend, Declan. Lots to look forward to, and look forward to speaking to you next week.
Okay, take care, Ken.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Declan's right there with all the GAA news. Dublin in good hands in the football, in the hurling, and of course the Jackies as well, all doing fantastically well. For those of you texting in asking about our lucky 15, it's expatriate Malaya, another Maddie, and Forrest Desargla. They're Dean Ryan's four-timer for today, lucky 15, so the best of luck with them. Wonderful chat with him, and of course Leon Blanche about Cheltenham, which starts of course on Tuesday. Everybody very, very excited. Great chat as well. Lots of text coming in about the chat. Reggie talking about the rugby skills as well. Fantastic. Talking about Gonzaga, of course, the first time in their history in Leinster Schools final, and good luck to them against St. Michael's. That's next weekend. But now we're talking football, we're going to be talking electricity, and we're going to be talking to Alan Cawley. And also the thing I could say to Alan is, before we talk about the electricity, is ole 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 ole.
We're back, Ken. We're back
with a bag.
The good times are back. You can't have Fergie Solskjaer in the dressing room. The good days are back, Ken.
That was a great picture with Fergie up in the VAR office, wasn't it, going around the WhatsApp groups.
Fergie, still influencing results he is all these years later. Fantastic. The one in the dressing room, though, was brilliant with Cantona, Ferguson and Solskjaer. So goes to show, Ken, I suppose, Solskjaer, you've been, from day one, you always said give him the job because the club is ingrained in him and he knows what it means. And there you have it when he's inviting them into the dressing room and you see what it means to them all. It's amazing.
Well, that's what the thing about it is, isn't it? He, you know, he's played for the club. He knows the traditions. You know, he has a passion for it. And it's rubbed off on all those players, Alan.
Of course it has, Ken. And even to look at, I think one of the first things he did was introduce the Blazers again that Ferguson used to always have. Anytime United travelled away, there was a respect that people seen where they were in airports or no matter where they came, this is the club, this is what you're representing, the badge, and they always looked the part, and I think he's introduced that back. So there's a bit of discipline there with him as well, but also what it means to the club. And it's just, as you said, the experience that he has, he's let them go and express themselves. And during the week, it was almost like watching a Ferguson team thinking, they're going to score here. Something's going to happen, like, you know.
I mean, and what a start, I mean, and what a finish. What about you? The penalty, I know, like, I'm a little bit biased. It was a bit harsh, though. I think it was a bit harsh. But at the same time, he did block it with his arm, you know.
Yeah, he left the referee with a decision to make. Now, I'm not a huge fan of the VAR thing, Ken. I don't mind it for offside. Or for like black and white decisions, but anything that's subjective when you're leaving it up to a fella in a box, and then I think it puts a lot of pressure having the referee down on the pitch, having to rewatch it again with the crowds and people swaying and maybe or influencing him. I just think it's very hard on him, but I wasn't complaining during the week.
No. And what a great finish, and what a cool finish as well from Michael Rashford.
Well, that's it. Like, you know, you think of where Rashford was under Mourinho. Like, he stilted his progress there for probably 18 months, Ken, because when that young fella burst on the scene, he looked like a potential superstar. Yeah. And then he kind of went through a bit of a lull, and Mourinho not playing him and showing him no confidence. And you remember that incident when he missed the chance and he turned around.
Yeah.
And that was terrible. Whereas you look at Solskjaer, who's obviously put his arm around him, looked after him, told him how good he thinks he is, and you look at what he's getting out of him. And for him to step up, a young kid, in that stadium the other night and finish with such aplomb the penalty, it was absolutely magnificent.
Yeah, and of course into the next round with Tottenham as well. Now Liverpool and Man City, of course, are next as well. What do you think? Man City should get through against Schalke. What about Liverpool against Bayern? 0-0, very deftly poised at the moment.
Yeah, it's a tough one, Ken. I think I spoke about this last week, and it might sound ludicrous to say this, but the position to find themselves in the league, and particularly if they were to pick up one or two injuries, I don't think it would be a bad thing if Liverpool went out of this, even though it's a tough tie anyway, and by no means are they going to throw the match. But I just think if they were to go out, something similar to what happened when they went out of the FA Cup at Wolves, I think because they're so close, they might not be as close ever again in the Premier League, that this is the year for them now, that they have to go all guns blazing to try and win that league. And I don't think it would be a bad thing if they did go out against Bayern.
Yeah. Funny, Gary Neville said that as well, that he said it might because of the potential matches that they've still got to play. And of course, but Man City are in there, they're still fighting on
the squad they have, you know, they're still in the FA Cup and they're still in, obviously, the Champions League going for the league. And that's my point about Liverpool, with the kind of limited numbers that they have. And we saw that there when they picked up a couple of injuries the last couple of weeks. I think they should just throw all their eggs in one basket and go for it. and try and win the Premier League. Because if they do get distractions with the Champions League, and I know it's such a huge tournament, and obviously they got to the final last year, but just for the sake of this year, I think they should just go all out for that Premier League.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. I think Liverpool are going to score away from home against Bayern. It could be a, you know, they're always capable of scoring anywhere with their front three, so it could be a score draw on the cards, and possibly four British teams in the last eight.
Which would be unbelievable, and I think it's wide open, Ken, the tournament. Like, you look at Spurs, you wouldn't fancy playing them in a one-off match. Ajax, who are magnificent against Real Madrid. United now with the confidence they have, they can attack that fully as well, that competition. So I think it's wide open, the tournament. It really is.
Now, let's move our attentions to the electricity, because a huge match last night, St. Pat's against Shamrock Rovers. Rovers edging it in the end by 1-0, but a cracking match by all accounts.
Brilliant game, Ken. Yeah, it's the best game I've seen this year so far. It was really, really good. There was a great atmosphere, brilliant crowd, typical Dublin derby, feisty, everyone getting stuck in. There was a great intensity to the match. And to be fair to Shamrock Rovers, they played really, really well. I was very impressed with them, particularly Jack Byrne on the ball, Ken in possession, very, very good. But all of them, they put in real hard work, especially in the second half. They probably could have been two up at half time, missed a couple of chances. And Drennan missed one as well for Pat. A sitter, but in the second half they had to dig in and just kind of, it was one of them games they had to grind out and be resilient, and I thought they were very, very good, and they've had a great start to the season, Shamrock Rovers, and they're in prime position. You'll have to get back up to Tala now and start supporting them.
Yeah, selling programmes again. They're on top, they're just 2 points ahead of Bowes, but Bowes have a game in hand, of course. But Bowes dropped points last night, 1-1 against Derry City.
Yeah, and they conceded the first goal they have. They've yet to concede an open play, but they conceded a penalty last night. But they did well to come back into the game, Ken, pick up the draw. Still keeps them up around the top. Still, obviously, very early days. But I think the big result was obviously Shamrock Rovers against Pats, because that was the best match of the night. But I think Dundalk, we're getting an emphatic win against Waterford as well. That just could kickstart their season, because it's been a bit of a stuttery start so far from them. But yeah, it's shaping up to be great so far. It's been such a positive start to the league. The crowds have been fantastic, and I have to say I really enjoyed the game in Inchicore last night. Both sets of fans were brilliant, and it was a really good game by the sets of players as well.
Yeah, fantastic. It sounds like you're out in the park yourself. How's your young fella getting on there?
It's 1-1 at the moment, but VAR, we might get a last minute penalty here. I'm going up into the VAR box now to give them a penalty.
say hello to Fergie there while you're there. Okay, listen, have a great weekend. Nice to talk to you, Alan, and I'll speak to you next week.
Brilliant, thanks, Ken.
Okay, don't forget to feed the ducks as well while you're there. Okay, Alan Colley there, of course. And a time is upon us, I'm afraid. But from Reggie and myself, thanks to all our guests who joined us this morning. And look forward to seeing you next week. Come on, Ireland, tomorrow against France. And, of course, Manchester United against Arsenal. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
It would be appropriate if his 100th putt this week dropped a birdie.
What a finish for McIlroy.
And Gentile goes down, and this is one very tough lady from Italy. Been 10 rounds a couple of times. Can't cope with Katie Taylor.
Sunshine. 106.8 Sunshine 106.8